Welcome to the first Front Stretch podcast of the 2018 season. I'm your host, Dustin Albino, and today I am joined by my colleagues, Zach Catanzaretti and Davey Siegel, as we're going to preview the 2018 NASCAR year. Now, we got a bunch of content coming your way in the coming weeks, as the Great American Race is less than 2 weeks away. Fellas, the past 11 weeks have flown by since Martin Truex Jr. wrapped up his first Cup Series championship, so let's start off this podcast by how your offseason went. Zach, you go.
It's been fun. I mean, it's about as fun as an offseason can get. You know, I got to do a few things. I just got back from the Jordan Anderson unveiling. He unveiled his new team, so that's something cool. Did the media tour, got to do the Xfinity Truck Series Awards. So, I mean, when it comes to outside the sport, you know, you get through it. You know, the month of December goes by pretty quick with holidays, and being down here in Charlotte, you got a lot more fun things to do. But, yeah, it was just another offseason for me.
And Davey?
Yeah, much of the same for me. I actually got out to the racetrack last weekend out in Tucson, Arizona for the Chili Willy 150. It's an interesting name for a race, but it was pretty cool. It was with the Wheel on All-American Series and NASCAR home tracks. Tucson Speedway is a cool little speedway out in Arizona. Noah Gregson was a notable NASCAR guy competing in that event. But it was pretty cool. That's kind of the only racing that I've gotten under my belt in person and on television throughout the offseason, but just kind of been braving one of those cold Michigan winters up here in East Lansing. Went home a couple times, got some warm weather every now and then, but it's getting to that point where everybody's antsy, ready to get back racing, and I'm no different.
Oh, you want to talk about cold? Go to that Bills-Colts game in 10-degree weather with
Bills Mafia, baby.
Yeah, with a foot of snow throughout the game. But, yeah, you know, this offseason went by very fast, and we're all around the same age. We're all college kids. I think it goes by quicker and quicker each year. And so this year's no different. But with that, we're coming into a season now that, you know, really didn't have much changes. After last year, we had a bunch of changes, you know, between bonus points, stage racing was the most notable one, the rec clock, you know, points, 1 point per position, 36 through 40th, you know, among many others. But this year, we haven't really seen many. Guys, you like the no changes, really? We'll start off with that.
Yeah, I know. I was pretty happy with it. I mean, I really enjoyed the racing last year. I thought the stage racing, I mean, obviously you always go into a big change like that with some worries. You know, you're a little, you know, you try to look at how it can go wrong. And I felt like it went really, really well, at least the first year. So I was definitely happy they didn't move around the stage formats. I guess counting caution laps, that was one of the things that people talked about. I was kind of surprised that wasn't really changed. I guess that was one change I was maybe looking at, but outside of that, with the championship format, the playoffs, you know, I thought it's been very, very good for the sport the last, you know, year or two. So I was actually really happy and really surprised that there were no changes, because that's just how the sport's been the last, feels like a while. It's been just every year there's some major, major changes. And this year it's actually consistent from last year. So if the fans, you know, continue what they've been saying, they should be pretty happy that it's the same as last year.
I completely agree. You know, the one change that I would even think about and I would like to see happen would be those caution laps, you know, not counting during the stage breaks. But obviously NASCAR VP Steve O'Donnell kind of debunked that and said that was not going to be changed. And other than that, I couldn't really think of anything, because this past season, and I know it's kind of cliche, but we say it all the time, this is the best season in NASCAR racing that we've ever seen. But I mean, this past season was pretty great. I mean, on track, off track, storylines, everything in between, it was really good. So I think that it's a good change for NASCAR to not kind of flip the script on the fans and the teams and the drivers this late in the game by making any monumental changes. And I think from here on out to the start of the Daytona 500 week, I think if any changes are made, it's going to be minimal ones that you're not really going to see affected in the on-track, in-race product. So I'm with Zach on this one. I'm kind of glad that NASCAR didn't choose to make any changes, because sometimes change can be a bad thing. And I think we've had a lot of change in the past, you know, half decade or so in the sport. So I think it's time for NASCAR to kind of just cool their jets a little bit and just kind of let the season play out and then go from there.
Yeah, I hate to be boring, but I got to agree with both of you. Having no real big changes, you know, monumental changes, I think it's really going to help the sport, because it seems like every year there's something new, something big coming up, whether it's last year with the stage racing, which I personally think the stage racing is one of the best changes NASCAR's ever made. You know, we saw, you know, a moment stick out from last year from Keselowski and Busch at the end of stage two in Martinsville last year, and all of these, you know, fundamental races within the race. And I think this year's going to be even better because now we have a year under our belt. And I think it's also cool that we have all these young guys coming into the sport now, and maybe this is their NASCAR. Maybe this is how, you know, it'll be for a while. We can only hope, because last year, I thought, like Davey said, it was a really good year of NASCAR racing. Zach, would you make any changes? I know Davey said he wouldn't, but would you?
Yeah, I definitely, you know, I brought it up there about the caution laps. You know, it just seemed like, because those cautions are long, you know, that's where they get their commercial time. That's where they're able to get usually what we get, you know, doing more caution time. But now they want to show more racing to the fans. So we end up paying for that when the stage ends. So it just seems a little bit clunky, you know, because they're out there running around and around for so long. And you know, kind of messes with the race a little bit because you actually get less green flag laps. But yeah, for the most part, you know, as I said, you know, I was really happy with last year. It was really interesting to see how manufacturer became one of the biggest topics. You know, it seems like for this year, we talk about there's no big changes with formats or anything, but we have so many new drivers in new places. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to me, that's just one of the most natural, exciting buildups for a season is, oh, this guy's going with this team. Can this team get back to where they're going? You know, we're bringing up, you know, Clint Boyer and Bubba Wallace and all these big drivers and new teams and, you know, coming and just all these changes. So I'm really excited about that. And when it comes to me, those are the changes that I love to see, new drivers and new teams and just in new places.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with both of you on the caution laps. I was at Richmond for both races last year, but I was counting the laps in between, like, the first and second stage, the second to third stage, and there was, like, 12 laps, and I was just like, what the hell's going on? Like, these cars are just literally going in circles. Like, that's the joke with NASCAR, they're just going in circles, but literally, they're just going in circles. I think they should count, but maybe before the year they should have, like, a set number instead of just randomly. And, of course, that differs between the racetracks with the sizes of them. But, I would make that change, too. There have been a couple changes, though, as Davey pointed out before the podcast. Practice times will now be served, or practice penalties will now be served at the end of the practice sessions in the garage, where the driver doesn't have to sit in the car, which was, you know, brought out by Joey Logano last year in New Hampshire. It's kind of lame. And the teams can't work on the car. So, guys, what do you think about that change, about the practice penalties and how the drivers don't have to sit in the car now?
I think that it's a good change just because of the fact that you brought up at New Hampshire last year. I mean, that was
a joke.
That was kind of a head-scratching moment for NASCAR when they saw all the backlash on social media and throughout the week on radio programs and television programs, and they kind of thought to themselves, well, we messed up here, didn't we? And I think they kind of understood that. And now I think the rule is still in place, and it's to deter teams from messing with the inspection system too much, which I'm sure we'll also get to with the invention of the new Hawkeye system. But I think that this is a good slight tweak just because it just makes more sense, because why would you have a human being sitting in a race car that can get upwards of 150 to 175 degrees just sitting there doing nothing on pit road in harm's way? You know, God forbid a car were to spin through the infield and hit them, when you could just put them in the garage, take the driver out, and just penalize them by not allowing them to work on it. I mean, I think this one is just way, way more easier and self-explanatory for new fans coming in. So, like, I mean, think about it like this. If you have a new fan and they ask you, okay, why is Joey Logano sitting on pit road with his car not running for 20 minutes or for 45 minutes or whatever, it's much easier to say, well, Joey Logano is actually in the garage out of his car and his team just can't work on the car because they were penalized, than saying the first one. You see what I'm saying? So yeah. I think this is it wasn't a much needed thing, but it was just one of those things that just seemed so simple that they had to make the change.
Yeah, Logano had to sit in that car the whole, I think it was a 50-minute practice session. He did come out after, and he called it a joke. I mean,
so yeah, and we saw one picture, I think, of his wife was like handing him a bottle, like shaking his hand, and he said he felt like he was in prison or something, like that. He tried to send it out. And, yeah, I've sat in a car, you know, when it comes to hot weather, and it's incredibly uncomfortable. You're in there so tight. Something like Joey's been doing this his whole life, but man, it's just, it was so weird to see. It was like a humiliation tactic from the sport. It's like when, you know, a kid does something bad in class and they put the little dunce hat on, he has to stand in front of the class, you know, and say, yeah, see, you did that. Now everyone has to look at you. Like, it was so weird. He just sits on pit road and, you know, he's got his fire suit on and he's just going out for no reason. He just sits there, and then when practice was done, he just pulls back into the garage. So, yeah, it's definitely a cleaner way to look at it. I mean, I guess that's just something they didn't think about. They didn't really expect someone to literally have to sit out an entire practice. But then, you know, there are going to be drivers who are going to miss entire practices, but they don't have to sit in their car out stranded on pit road where, as you said, you know, some dangerous stuff can happen and it can get out of hand. So, yeah, this was a good move. It was something I didn't really think about, but I'm really glad that they did.
Yeah, and another change going into this year is going to the back of the field now, where if you crash a car throughout the weekend before the race or blow an engine and have to replace that engine, you will now have to start at the rear of the field. I personally like that rule because I thought it was always kind of confusing. Zach, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that was one of the things I was always confused about. You know, when someone had that issue, I was always like you. You know, I didn't know where they were going to end up in the shake of things. So now that it's, you know, pretty straightforward, we know what's going to happen to these guys. Yeah, it's just one of those things that becomes more simple.
I completely agree. I mean, like you said, Dustin, sometimes I got confused with it, so I had to resort to my dad, who's been watching the sport for way longer than I have. He got me into it, and I'm saying, okay, if he wrecked out in the first practice, then he can retain his starting spot since it was before qualifying. But if it was happy hour, which is after qualifying, then he has to go to the... It was just too confusing. And like we say, look, like NASCAR is trying to attract the new generation of fans, the quote-unquote millennial generation, right? Make things simple. Make things easy to understand. What's hard to understand is if you crash on the first or second practice, only if they're before qualifying, then your car is impounded and you have to start at the rear or start at the front, whatever. This is simple. If you crash your car anytime before the green flag for the race drops, you're starting in the rear. Simple. Just like the rule with going to the garage now instead of on pit road. You know, the caution laps, that's not super simple, but it's self-explanatory. It's just making things simple and easy to understand. So I agree with this change as well.
Yeah, I've been watching this sport since I was literally 3 years old, and I feel like I have a good grasp of it. But when I get confused, like when people ask me, you know, like, what does this do or what's that do? We could talk about the backup rule, whatever. And I don't, like, I'm getting confused. There's something wrong with that. And I think that could go for you too,
like,
as well.
You should be studying the rule book to understand where your favorite driver is going to be starting in the race. It exactly. Should just be black, white, and concrete.
Yeah, I agree. Now, we're going to move on to Zach. You were at the media tour a few weeks ago now. A lot of new faces and new places. What stood out to you in Charlotte just a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, well, first off, from a media member, reporter, photographer standpoint, it was great to have the breakout sessions back. A couple of years ago, that's how it was. We had breakouts. And then last year, they went to just the press conference setup where, you know, we're all just sitting on our desk. There's one driver on the stage, and we all have to raise our hands and ask questions. It's very... it's not personal at all. You don't get that one-on-one time with the driver. And we didn't really seem to get much out of drivers back then because they just didn't, they're just less likable, you know, because they're not talking just to you. So for this year, they made that change, and that was great. And it was great to speak to David Reagan. He was one guy who I spoke to. Asked him, obviously, Landon Castle is out of Front Row Motorsports this year, and Michael McDowell's in. Wanted to talk to him about what the change is like to the team. You know, that's one of those small teams, and what McDowell can bring to the sport, and what can he bring to the team. He's one of those masters on one of those small teams. So Eric Almirola was another one. He told me that he doesn't want to be the weak link at SHR. Obviously, he's going to the 10 for Danica Patrick, and some big, big equipment there. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is – I can just tell he's – Of all the drivers, I would have to say he was the most positive. He really seems like he's going to be a whole new guy this year. He told me he can't wait, not even at the track, him getting into his airplane and flying to the track. That's where the excitement's really going to kick in, because he's not going with RPM, you know, wondering if he can get a top 20 and thinking that a top 10 is a win. Now he's going thinking, knowing that he's got the equipment to win. So it seems like that mindset's already kicked in. In this preseason, so there was a lot of excitement. It was cool to see a lot of the drivers. Obviously, one of the big topics, which we're going to talk about a little bit about here, was Kyle Busch talking about the young guys getting pretty much the lion's share of the attention from the media and from everybody. And you know, whether that's right or wrong, you know, that's just where the sport.
Yeah, when you talk about Almirola,
guy,
go ahead,
definitely
Davey.
Some on that topic.
Yeah, and when we talk about Almirola, I mean, my Twitter and my Instagram page has been taken over by Eric Almirola, so he's definitely a different guy, like Zach was saying. But Zach, when it comes to like McDowell and Reagan, you know, what was your thoughts with them? How did they respond?
Can you say that one more time? I think I lost you a little bit.
Sure. When it came to McDowell and Reagan, you know, what are their outlook on the season? Because they're running for Front Row Motorsports, but, you know, last year Front Row ran around, well, let's be honest, about 30th. And with McDowell, he had his best year ever last year with Levine Family Racing, which we will talk about with Casey Kane coming up. But what's McDowell's outlook? I saw some of the quotes, and I mean, he thinks he can win at some of these tracks.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you're only going to get so much out of a team like that. And as I said, McDowell's one of those guys who he understands what he's getting into here. You know, someone even called this a step down because that 95 seemed to be making some pretty solid adjustments for 2017. Top 20s were pretty much on average for those guys. And yeah, for this year, I mean, when I think of David Reagan and Mike McDowell, I think about plate racing. And we know, heck, I mean, they were both up front for the July Daytona race last year. They almost won the thing. And now they're going to be teammates this year. So if they can work together on those tracks, they can absolutely make it work. And we saw Chris Buescher, he was able to get it done for that team through the fog rain out at Pocono a few years ago. So, I mean, when you get drivers like that who, I mean, David Reagan hasn't missed a cup race in, I think, 12 years. I mean, he's been around. I had to look that up, and I'm like, damn, he's been around longer than I thought. Yeah. You know, when it comes to, you know, doing a little bit with Joe Gibbs Racing and NWR and Roush, and now he's just one of those small team guys. So when you get guys like that who've been around here for years and years, they know what they're getting into.
Yeah, Reagan's making his 400 start at Atlanta, his home track, the second week of the year. But, Zach, I'm going to bounce this off to Davey right now. The Kyle Busch situation, you know, we're all young. We're all early 20s. But when he says that these guys are coming into the sport at a young age and NASCAR's kind of marketing them in a different way, I think that's not a bad thing, but he, I mean, apparently he does. So, Davey, what's your take on that, and is NASCAR doing the right thing by marketing these young guys to the younger audience now?
Two words, social media.
Yep.
There was none when Kyle Busch was coming into the sport in the mid-2000s, and don't get me wrong, he was one of, if not the hottest young drivers on the scene with Hendrick Motorsports. I remember like it was yesterday. He won the first race in the car tomorrow at Bristol, and I don't even know if it was an expletive, but he didn't have some kind words to say on TV in Victory Lane after that race. But, I mean, look, it would be different if Kyle Busch was coming up through the ranks into the Cup Series right now, because he would be getting the you-know-what promoted out of him on social media by NASCAR and by Fox and by NBC and by websites like us at frontstretch.com. But this is a new era. This is the Bubba Wallace time. This is the Chase Elliott, Ryan Blaney, Eric Jones, Daniel Suarez time. This is the time where we have avenues like social media and like shows, Race Hub, NASCAR America, websites like Front Stretch and all that kind of stuff to promote these young drivers and get the word out and publicize them to the greater public. Because, frankly, when Kyle Busch was coming in, NASCAR was not struggling. NASCAR was on the up and up. They were the hot thing on the block. And it's kind of crazy how things can change in a little over 10 years, because right now it seems like every other conversation that anybody in the industry has is, how do we attract new fans? How are we going to get back to the top? How are we going to compete with the NFL? And look, I mean, there's ways to go about that. And I think promoting and marketing your young stars is one of the best things that you can do. So look, is Bubba Wallace going to set the world on fire and win a championship this year? I don't think so. Is Ryan Blaney going to do that? Is Chase Elliott going to do that? Look, they have a chance, but let's get one thing straight. Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick, Brad Keselowski, Jimmy Johnson, those are the heavy hitters. Martin Truex Jr., by the way, defending champion. Those are the heavy hitters. Those are the guys that you are going to have to beat if you want to contend to win races on a weekly basis and contend to win championships on a yearly basis. Now, I think part of why Kyle Busch is a little upset, and I'll toss it off to Dustin and Zach after I finish this point, was because he's saying to himself, okay, look, I have a championship. I finished second in the championship last year. I've won so many races. I'm almost a 200 across my National Series career. And how many cup races has Ryan Blaney won? One. How many races has Chase Elliott won? Zero. Bubba Wallace? Zero. He has only had a handful of starts. So I think that's where some of the discontent and anger, I guess I would say, comes from when you look at it from Kyle Busch's perspective. Is he wrong? I'm not going to say he's wrong, but I think that if he looks at the bigger picture of stuff, and I'm sure that was said in one of those heat-of-the-moment things, he would definitely see where NASCAR brass is coming from. So I'm kind of on the fence with that, but I think he kind of understands why they're doing it. He's just a little jealous.
I think it's time for them to I mean, I'm with you, Davey. I agree 100%. But I do think that it's time for Chase, and Blaney won last year, but it's time for them to perform even more now. I mean, they're in some of the best equipment. They're with Penske now with Blaney, and Chase is with Hendrick. And Bubba, yeah, he's with RPM, which is with RCR now. But, you know, RCR was on the up and up last year, so who knows? And then you got, you know, Byron coming into the 24, and you got Suarez and Jones with Gibbs. It's time for them to perform, and I do think they are going to perform this year, which will even help that marketing even that much more, and it'll make NASCAR probably look even better. Zach, what's your take on that with Kyle Busch's, I guess, problems towards NASCAR marketing the younger demographic?
Well, yeah, it's just funny how quick times change, because it seemed like to me not too long ago, NASCAR was getting bashed because they weren't promoting the young drivers. They had all these guys coming up. They were coming up through trucks and Xfinity, and they were exciting, and you know, fans were getting excited, but NASCAR wasn't really getting involved in it. And now it's completely swung the other way around, and now they're doing it too much. I mean, to me, when I look at Kyle Busch, I mean, how much marketing does he need right now? To me, he's found his spot in the sport. He's been here for a long time. Very long time. He's got a championship, and he has a very stable home at JGR. I don't think he needs too much attention. I know he loves it a lot. We saw that at Bristol last year when he won, and fans were booing him. He got on top of his car with his broom. I mean, he just loves that energy. And as I said, I spoke to Ryan Blaney, and he gets asked to do a lot. You know, he was in the Logan Lucky movie, Cars 3. You know, he does a lot of stuff, and he says he gets those opportunities because not only does he get asked, but he says yes. And he told me that, I can tell you personally, this is Ryan talking, I can tell you personally that Kyle doesn't like to do a lot of stuff, so that's why they don't ask him to do a lot of stuff. And to me, when he said that, I'm like, that makes perfect sense. I mean, he's still young, but he's getting a little bit older now, you know, compared to these kids, and you look at Kevin and all these guys, and they don't really feel like they need to get their names out there anymore. They're having kids, they're winning so many races, they're very stable. You know, they found their marketing technique. They found their moniker. You know, people know who they are. So these drivers, that's people don't know who they are yet. They feel like they have to get out there. They have to be aggressive. And I love seeing that. So when it came to what Kyle said, I struggled to. I mean, I know, as I said, he's one of those guys who loves that type of attention. But I just don't see why that has to be important for the sport to figure out.
And let's think of it this way, like, NASCAR is trying to get more fans, right? So they're trying to appeal to the casual fan. The casual fan, more than likely, will know who Kyle Busch is. These younger guys, they might not know who they are. Like William Byron, for example. He's raced in NASCAR 2 years, he's done a lot in those 2 years, winning the Xfinity Series Championship last year and won like 7 or 8 races in the Truck Series in 2016. But not everyone knows who he is, and he's stepping into some big shoes. So if you're trying to get more fans, I think NASCAR has to do what they're doing.
I feel like Kyle Busch is just like, yo, NASCAR, throw me a tweet, throw me a little Insta, give me a little Snapchat every now and then. I mean, I don't think he's outraged because, you know, he's not getting any marketing, because if you look in the commercials and the promos, like, you see that 18 M&M's car, you see him hoisting trophies, you see him winning races and doing donuts. But I think it's just one of those things. Like I said, times change, people move on, different things happen. And this is one of those times where Bubba, Blaney, Chase, Suarez, and Jones, those are the hot guys, and they just happen to be young, and that's why NASCAR is promoting the heck out of them and marketing the heck out of them. And honestly, I think they're doing a pretty good job. Now, look, could they do a little bit better with the older generation of Brad Keselowski, Kyle Busch, and maybe even above that with Kevin Harvick, Jimmy Johnson, those guys? Sure. But they obviously have a strategy right now talking about NASCAR, and that is to market the young, up-and-coming, not superstars, but stars, because they're savvy on social media, they're great with the fans. I mean, Ryan Blaney was testing at Texas, and he just hopped over the fence and had pizza with a bunch of fans. Now, look, I've never spoken to Kyle Busch, but from everything that I've gathered, and I mean, you guys can speak to it as well, he doesn't strike me as the guy that would just hop over the fence during testing and just go by and have pizza with fans at a Texas tire test. Ryan Blaney, he's just a chill dude who, before he got to Penske, and Penske claims that he didn't make him do it, was having a mustache and hair flowing every which way. He just seems like a chill guy who you can relate to. Kyle Busch, somewhat, but not as much. I think it's just much about the person as it is the marketing strategy.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Another change, though, in something that was big, and Ryan Newman hit on this in a long statement about the new Hawkeye system, which is taking over as like the LIS inspection program. Zach, I know you were there in Charlotte. So what were you? What was your take on what Newman said as you were mentioning to us?
Well, he's one of those guys who you know you're gonna get the straight poop from. You know,
I love talking to Newman.
Yeah, he's so cool. It's him and Brad and maybe Jamie McMurray or someone like that. When you ask him a question, he's been around for so long. They have such a broad perspective on everything. And when they talk, you listen. You make sure you got multiple recorders going. And yeah, he sounded off pretty well on those topics. And I'm not too well versed on the Hawkeye system and the. He knew quite a bit about it. He was going in pretty deep, and from the data sharing from the teams, and how that's is it going to be too much different from this year to last year? And when it comes to him, I definitely enjoy his opinions, and I definitely enjoy that type of driver who's able to get his thoughts out there. We talk about the young drivers. They don't seem to be doing that as much. Someone like an Eric Jones or a Blaney, they seem to be a little low key. So. When it comes to Ryan and everything he was saying, I was taking notes. I was trying to become more educated on the Hawkeye system and the data sharing and what goes in to these race teams and this technology.
Yeah, you've also got to remember that he's an engineer from Purdue. He's got a degree, so he knows what he's talking about. But about this Hawkeye system, I'm like you, Zach. It's supposed to, I think from what I know, or what I've been told, is it's supposed to kind of reduce the amount of time that you're in inspection line, right? So last year, there's a bunch of teams that kept failing, and they missed qualifying for it. Like Atlanta, I think last year had 15 drivers missed qualifying, and that's just not acceptable. Now, it is interesting because an owner, who I'm not going to disclaim on this podcast who it was, talked to me that up until Homestead, they had tested this on 55 cars, and all 55 cars had failed. Now, that's obviously not good. So, Davey, I don't know what you think about this Hawkeye system or what's your take on it. I mean, I don't know what to expect.
Well, if Ryan Newman found out that fact, I think that he would have not minced words even more so, if that's even possible. that's pretty interesting. But I guess going off of Newman, I guess first of all, I think, Zach, it was a good point that you brought up, kind of like you don't hear things that get media headlines out of Ryan Blaney, Chase Elliott, Eric Jones, those type of guys. But you do hear him out of Brad Keselowski. He's never afraid to speak his mind. Ryan Newman, no filter. Kevin Harvick, Martin Truex Jr., kind of the same thing. And I think there's one reason why that happens. And honestly, it's comfort, because Ryan Newman is comfortable in his own skin, one, but he's comfortable with his ride and his career. Like, he's established, he's made the Final Four, he's won a handful of races, he's not going anywhere. Brad Keselowski's not going anywhere. Kevin Harvick's not going anywhere. Eric Jones, yes, he's won championships. Yes, he's won Xfinity races and truck races, but he hasn't done anything in the Cup Series, so I think it's more of like a tiptoe situation for those young guys. But talking about the Hawkeye system, I think I saw either on the NASCAR app or on Instagram or Twitter a sneak peek into what the Hawkeye system will look like. Looked like a disco party. And I was like, oh my God, what is going on in here? And I mean, when you talk about NASCAR being one of the most technologically advanced sports there is, I mean, it's funny because you look at an inspection in prior years and it's just these big metal templates just going on top and in front and back of the cars. And now you got all these flashing lights, you got all these lasers, you got this black tent, you got this whole thing going on. So I think, I mean, I don't know if there's going to be viewing areas or like viewing parties with this whole disco thing going on, but it's definitely a change. It's definitely a bold strategy by NASCAR. It's definitely interesting. And I think the only thing that it should be judged on is whether or not it streamlines the process and makes it more effective. I think at the end of the day, if it does its job and everybody's able to qualify, everybody's able to know in a relatively short time period whether or not they pass inspection and whether or not their win is going to be encumbered, even though that's not really a word anymore in NASCAR's vocabulary, then I think it'll do its job fairly well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree better. But before moving on, I'm going to take this time to remind everyone to follow the Front Stretch Facebook page and the Front Stretch Twitter handle with the @FrontStretch username on Twitter and searching Front Stretch on Facebook. We collectively engage with you, the viewers, and put our best foot forward with everything NASCAR related. Now, guys, I want to talk about Danica a little bit. Now, obviously, her last ride in NASCAR is coming up in the Daytona 500. And on Friday, she announced what her paint scheme, what her driver suit's going to look like. I know Davey said offline's a little bland. But racing with Premium Motorsports, you know, owned by Jay Robinson, I really think this does a lot for that small team. Don't you say? Don't you think, Zach?
Oh man, big time! I mean, that was. It took a while. You know, we were talking about before the show about, you know, it took a while for her to find a team that I really, you know, we're looking down, you know, Ganassi and all these bigger teams, and they started, you know, getting off the market, and we're like, man, where's she gonna head up? And this whole time, I was, a part of me was hoping she was gonna go with a smaller team. You know, because we know that Danica effect is real. She's got a big fan base, and she's been able to bring sponsors her whole career, at least up until this season. And then she got GoDaddy. So with Premium Motorsports, I mean, that's a huge deal for that team. I mean, they're always posting on Instagram and everything, trying to find sponsors and trying to bring people in through VIP, you know, behind the driver intro stage and trying to get people involved. And then they get, you know, one of the biggest race car drivers in the world for her last race with their team. I mean, that is massive. And, I mean, it's Daytona. You know, we see how these plate races go. Last year was unbelievable how many cars got wrecked out, you know, from Talladega. And just looking at the 500, not many drivers, you know, finished. Greg Golden got a top 10 at Talladega last year. So anything's possible. You know, she showed some pretty strong numbers on plate tracks early, but those definitely fell off late. So I'm interested to see how she'll perform. She's got some pretty good power under that hood. If you can just stay out of trouble, which, you know, she's been able to do at times, as I said, but it, you know, a lot of that comes down to luck. So a big deal for the team, and it could end up well if she stays out of trouble.
That's the thing, though. I mean, like, it is Daytona, so anything goes. I mean, it'd be one thing if Danica was making her last start at Atlanta and she's driving for Premium Motorsports, because then, all right, she'll finish five laps down and finish in 35th. But Daytona, it's literally anybody's game. It's a crapshoot. She could wind up winning this race. Now, will she?
Could you imagine?
I'm not going to, right? But, I mean, it's not out of the question. At a place like Atlanta, a mile-and-a-half track, it would be. But it's huge for Premium Motorsports just because of the media attention that it's going to garner. Yeah. You're going to get, I mean, the Daytona 500 in and of itself is a huge event. It's a destination type event. You know, no disrespect to Texas Motor Speedway, for example, but you're probably not going to have a lot of national and international media come to Texas Motor Speedway to cover a race. But you're going to have a lot of international media and national media outlets come to the Daytona 500 to cover the Great American Race, the Super Bowl of NASCAR racing. So I think with that being said, Danica Patrick, also one of the biggest names in motorsports, making her final NASCAR start, it's going to be huge. Huge for GoDaddy, huge for Premium, huge for the sport in general. So I think that this is a win-win situation for Premium. If she crashes out on lap one and finishes dead last, I mean, they're still going to get so much money out of this, so much media attention out of this. And who knows, maybe they'll attract some sponsorship, which at the end of the day, we all know, guys. I mean, for small teams in NASCAR, it's not an easy road to the top, and it all starts with sponsorship. So this can only mean positive things for them.
Yeah, I think it's a really, really big deal for Premium Motorsports. Jay Robbins came into the Cup Series in 2014 as an owner, and I'm looking at some of his drivers now that he's had since then, and his most marketable or biggest name driver he's had is Michael Waltrip, and he's had him for a pair of races, three races, and one of them being last year in Michael's final race in the 500, getting a top 10. So you never know. You know, like Davey said, it's Daytona, so anything can happen. I wouldn't be surprised to see if she get a top 10, top 5. That's something she's never done before, to get top 5, but I wouldn't be surprised. And she has nothing to lose. I mean, seriously. So
literally nothing. It's her last race. She has nothing to lose. And she's not going to be worried about making friends or making enemies. She's going to lay it all out on the line. So it should be interesting.
Yeah, and like you said, Davey, I think it's going to bring so much attention to that small race team. And it may help them attract some sponsorship for future drivers going into the season a little bit further. But guys, I know, Zach, you kind of hit on this. Are you surprised that it took so long for Danica to find a ride? Because when she first announced this at Homestead last year, I know, Zach, you and I were there in the media center. I thought instantly Ganassi, that she was going to do Indy and Daytona for Ganassi. That turns out it's not the case. So are you surprised it took her so long to find a ride?
I thought she was going to announce it right on the press conference.
Yeah.
You know, right when she stopped crying and she turned around and she said, okay, I'm doing Indy 500, Daytona 500, and here are my teams. But that didn't happen. Someone asked her and we're like, yeah, we're still looking at some teams. And I'm like, ooh, interesting. And I thought definitely by definitely by Christmas. You know, we're gonna find out. But yeah, it took up until the 2018 pretty much to find out. And yeah, that was surprising. I mean, I definitely expected her to have some solid backing. I mean, just putting everything, her entire career, everything into this one race. This is it. The big Danica double, that's the big, you know, marketing for her. She's got it on the back of a stock car, and I'm sure she's going to have it on an Indy car in May. And yeah, I'm surprised it took so long. As I said, we're going down the list of the big teams, and Ganassi was the biggest one I thought of. Only two cars on this side, and I think two or three Indy cars as well. And that seemed like a reliable place, definitely strong connections and some great technology, but that didn't turn out. So as I said, a part of me is great that it's going to a small team, and yeah, for the most part, I was pretty much open to any team at that point. But yeah, I'm absolutely shocked that it took this long.
I was pretty shocked that it took this long too. But at the same time, I think that this has kind of been the way that the sport is going, because usually, I mean, as short as like a half a decade or a decade ago, when you talk about silly season, every ride would be shored up by, you know, the end of the summer at the latest almost. And I mean, this year it is the complete opposite. People don't have rides and it's February 2nd. You know what I mean? So I guess I wasn't surprised in that vein, because it is taking longer than expected for all drivers, no matter, you know, how many top tens they've gotten, male or female, sponsor, no sponsor, whatever. But I mean, at the end of the day, once she had a sponsor lined up, I think that probably accelerated the talks with any team very, very quickly, because as we know, you got a sponsor, you'll most likely have a ride. So it's good for premium to get her. I thought Ganassi was going to be the surefire bet, but alas, Chip Ganassi had different plans. I mean, Jamie McMurray is no slouch on plate tracks, and Kyle Larson was one lap away from winning the dang 500 last year. So Ganassi is going to be strong, but premium definitely going to get a lot out of this Danica thing.
Yeah, side note, I think it's really cool that GoDaddy stepped up and is going to be her sponsor. They were with her for most of...
Yeah, it's going to, like, bookend her racing career.
Yeah.
Yeah, the number seven, yeah, it seems, you know, pretty much special. She posted a picture of a green GoDaddy fire suit. I'm like, man, that's a throwback. It's a good way to end it.
But guys, with Danica being the next big name to retire from racing, in the past years we have Tony Stewart, Carl Edwards, Jeff Gordon, Dale Jr., all these big names, Matt Kenseth, likely. What's that state about the sport, of the state of the sport, with all these big name drivers retiring in such a short time period, Davey?
Well, I was in the camp saying that NASCAR was in trouble. You know, all these big names are leaving. This is not a good time for NASCAR, and they're already on the downslope. But then I listened to some media members that I respected on various radio shows, and I think Doug Rice of Performance Racing Network, he was one of the first ones to say it, and it kind of just took me aback a little bit. And he basically said, look, this happens every now and then. And I was thinking about it, and I'm like, all right, well, there was a time when Dale Earnhardt and David Pearson and Ricky and Richard Petty and all these guys, they were the top of the top in the sport, and then they made their way out. And who came after them? Well, Jimmy Johnson, Jeff Gordon, Tony Stewart, Matt Kenseth, all those guys came after the Dale Earnhardt generation. And after the Richard Petty generation, it was the Dale Earnhardt generation. So I think we're in one of those periods where it's a bit of a lull. It's going to be one of those like 5 or so year periods where you see all these big names leave the sport, like, you know, Jimmy Johnson, he's getting up there in age. Kevin Harvick, same with him. I mean, Greg Biffle just kind of left because, and that goes back to another one of my points I wanted to make. A lot of the time, drivers get their choice when they want to leave, but lately it's been more by force. Matt Kenseth was, you know, pretty outspoken in saying that last year with Joe Gibbs Racing. But I think the sport's in an okay place just because they have so many young guys coming up. I think this is the biggest influx of young talent that we've had in a long time, because getting past the guys that are in the Cup Series this year that we've talked about, there's a ton in Xfinity, most notably Christopher Bell. There's a ton in the Truck Series. And oh, by the way, there's a ton in the NASCAR K&N Pro Series East and West. I mean, Todd Gilliland, Harrison Burton, these kids are not even 17 years old yet, and they already have championships under their belt on the East and the West Series, and they have deals with Kyle Busch Motorsports in the Truck Series, and before we know it, they'll be in Xfinity, and they'll be in Cup in the next 5 or 10 years. So there's not a lack of talent, that's for sure. It's just one of those transition periods, and I think NASCAR. Will they come out of it better, looking better than what they were with the guys that are leaving right now? We're not going to know the answer to that for another 20, 25 years once these young guys' careers are coming to a close. But I think that people have a reason and a right to be worried, and I'm one of them, don't get me wrong, but I think putting things in perspective can help matters a little bit.
Davey, I think you hit that spot on, so I'm going to ask you first, who do you think's next to go?
That's tough. I mean, I don't think Jimmy Johnson will be the next to go just because his fitness regimen is ridiculously off the charts. I mean, Matt Kenseth is gone. Kevin Harvick, I mean, I think he's going to race out the remainder of his contract with Stewart Haas Racing, which I believe has a few more years left on it. There's been some talk this week about Kurt Busch hanging up the helmet, possibly at the end of this year, maybe at the end of next year. I just don't know whether or not I think he's done. But if you're putting me on the spot here, I might have to get back to you with another one. But since you're putting me on the spot, I guess I will say Kurt Busch, just because he is up there. He's had his share of off-the-track issues. His performance, granted, he's the defending Daytona 500 champion. But other than that, I mean, he would have probably been a bubble driver in terms of making the playoffs last year. So the performance has not been there, obviously not up to snuff with his championship season in the early 2000s. But if you had a gun to my head, I guess I'd say Kurt Busch.
I would agree with you there, in that there have been talks about that. And because he signed a one-year deal with Stewart Haas, I mean, he's not going to get much better of an opportunity with better equipment this late in his career than with Stewart Haas. But personally, and I know Zach and I have talked about this on previous podcasts last year, I personally think that Kurt is one of the most underrated talents in all of NASCAR. I mean, that guy went into an Indy car, his first ever Indy car race at the 500. When was that? 2014? Finished sixth. Yeah. Like, he's one of the most, I'm not going to say NASCAR, I think he's one of the most underrated talents in all of racing. But Zach, I mean, what do you think about all these drivers retiring and who's next?
Well, yeah, when it comes, we just talked about how NASCAR is promoting these young drivers. This is why, because someone has to pass the torch and keep it going. And I can tell you one thing, if this happened maybe 5 or 6 years ago when Andy Lally and Kemi Conway and Stephen Light were winning Rookie of the Year, I would be a little more concerned. Because that was a pretty tough time. You know, I remember, you know, once the Joey Logano of fandom kind of wore off when he came into Cup, nobody really seemed to be following back up, and that's completely not the issue anymore. So to me, that really changes my mindset going into these next few years. You know, it just seems like they're transitionary issues, and really the only thing you gain is perspective, and you start to appreciate seeing these drivers race. You know, we go back to 2015, we have Jeff, Dale, Tony, yeah, the Biff. I mean, these guys were racing for wins, and we look back on that footage now and we're like, man, look at them race. That's back.
Oh, by the way, Carl Edwards too.
Yeah.
Carl too, yeah. I mean, it's a lot of names, and yeah, you look back on footage and you see them race, and it you already start to feel that nostalgia already. So that just happens. Drivers just leave, and it just seems weird now because it's happening all within, you know, 2, 3, 4 years. And there's so many new guys who not a lot of people know a whole lot about who are stepping into their rides. Alex Bowman and Byron and these guys. And as I said, it's just a big transitionary issue. And when it comes to the next guy who I would say would hang it up, I would agree to say Kurt, because he just seems less stable, you know, where he is. You know, he's playing with one-year deals, and sponsorship was a big talk. With Jimmy, he's had lows his entire career. He's got, you know, a few years instead of just one. And I know with Jimmy, he seems like one, if he were to win his eighth, he would be out of here. Chad Knaus would probably hang up his career too, and then they'll go into the Hall of Fame together. I've heard that. But, yeah, I would have to go with Kurt as the guy who I would pick, just because he seems less stable. And when we talked about how great of a driver he is, I appreciate an all-around type of racer. We saw him run the Indy 500 and do, you know, a tremendous job. He tested a V8 supercar years ago. He did some drag racing. He tested an open wheel car out in Abu Dhabi. I mean, he's just one of those guys who he just loves racing. And I appreciate that in a race car driver so much. And it'll be sad to see him go. But at the same time, I'll be fascinated to see what type of racing he does after that.
It'll be funny if he comes out now and wins, like, you know, 5 or 6 races and says, screw you guys, like, I'm not retiring. but guys, I want to end this podcast on kind of a fun note. I want to kind of predict what we think is going to be one story that stands out or one story that we want to watch throughout the year. Davey, I'll kick it off with you.
Well, we were talking off podcast, off air before, and I wanted to not be super mainstream. So I'm gonna say that a story that has intrigued me throughout the past year or so and is going to keep intriguing me is Clint Boyer at Stewart Haas Racing. This is going to be the year, whether or not I think we know whether he's got it, or this is kind of like the make or break year for him. Because, look, 2016, not a great year for him, obviously, in subpar equipment, only 3 top 10 finishes. So 2017, we knew that he was going to be taking over the 14 car for Tony Stewart, future Hall of Famer. But he didn't really perform that well. 6 top fives. He had a couple back-to-back, I think, second place finishes. 13 top tens, 22 laps led, but his average finish was 15th. Not great. And obviously he did not make the playoffs with that type of performance. But we thought that Clint Boyer was going to come over to Stewart Haas Racing and not set the world on fire necessarily. We thought that he was going to be a pretty solid option there. We thought that he was probably going to be tied, if not the number 2 option, behind Kevin Harvick out there of the SHR stable. But he's been number 3. And I mean, it would really be telling to me if Eric Almirola were to come in that 10 car and kind of surpass Boyer in the 14. But I think that with another year under their belt of Clint Boyer and Mike Bogorevich working together, I think another year working out the kinks, I think Clint Boyer will find victory lane this year. I don't think he's going to be a championship contender, but I don't think that he's going to have the season that he had this past year in 2017. So I'm going to go with Clint Boyer as an interesting story that I'm going to be watching throughout the season to see whether or not he can kick it into high gear and get into victory lane and kind of silence those haters, because the dude hasn't won since, what, 2012?
Yeah, 12.
He had 3 wins in 2012, and he's had a goose egg ever since. So I'm seeing if Clint Boyer can get to victory lane. And also, to close it out, I mean, when Clint Boyer is in the headlines, that is good for NASCAR, because that is one of the most fun dudes in all of sports, period. He's one of the best interviews. Whenever you see him on TV, you just get a smile on your face, because you never know what he's going to say, and it's always funny. So, Clint Boyer, I'm looking for you this season.
Zach, what about you? What's your main story you're watching throughout the year?
Yeah, I'm dying to see Boyer in victory lane, right? That'd be fun. But, yeah, when it comes to one of the guys who would talk about make or break and what to expect, it comes under the same roof, and that's with Eric Almirola. We saw that 10 team, you know, they just struggled so much with Danica with the, I mean, top 20s was a decent day. And I know with Eric, that's absolutely not what he wants. And he spent, you know, years and years at Richard Petty Motorsports. And now to see him with a, you know, a big team, you know, it was kind of surprising to see his name thrown in there. But once Smith could jump on board, it was kind of expected. But, you know, I've been trying to figure out what to expect with him. You know, you said, you know, if he's going to be better or not than Boyer, is he going to win? How many top fives, top tens? Can he make the playoffs? I mean, what issues is he going to find with that team? I mean, it's really tough to find out, and that's one I'm really interested in. And one of the mainstream drivers we were talking about a little was Bubba Wallace. And I probably wouldn't put him on the list as high, but when they did that RCR alliance and they switched to Chevy, that definitely got my attention, because I felt like if they stayed on the path that they were going, Bubba was going to struggle a bit this year, especially as his first season. He did pretty well last year, but I feel like there's going to be a lot more uphill battles. So with that opening up, you know, that could bring some good numbers for him. And one more thing, not even driver related, but it's a Volvo in the fall. Yeah. The Volvo race at Charlotte. I mean, holy hell! I mean, I think Martin Truex was asked about it, and they've been doing some testing there, and they finally brought out the official layout of the track. They took out a couple corners to get over to the Speedway one, and when he talked about the turn on the back stretch, you actually move in banking. You actually go from the banking on the back down to the flat and back up, and he said there's going to be a lot of issues. It's going to be really, really difficult, and how you set your car up, you're going to be up on the banking going 160 probably going into the last hairpin, and it's going to be really fascinating to see how they set those cars up. And hopefully it's under the, I don't know if it's a night race or a day race, I forget, but it's going to be a really fascinating show to see them go from the infield to the race, to the oval. It's going to be very exciting.
Yeah, I liked how you hit on Bubba, but for the most part, we didn't hit on the young drivers as ones we're watching. I think it'll be interesting to see Alex Bowman replacing Dale Jr. and then William Byron replacing Casey Kane. And speaking of Casey Kane, he's my guy to watch. He's going over to Levine Family Racing. And over the past 3 years, you know, Casey Kane's it's going to sound really harsh. He's been almost non-existent. Like last year, yes, he won a race. He won the second biggest race of the year, being the Brickyard. And it was nice to see kind of the aggression and him beating Brad Keselowski on that late race restart. And there was a bunch of late race restarts. Zach, you were there for that. That was one of the craziest races of the year. But to see that aggression, he still has the passion. And yes, he's taken, and he admitted he's taken a step back because he was in probably the best equipment he's ever been in. Over the past 3 years, he's only about 107 laps, zero of which came in 2016. So I think it'll be interesting to see how he performs, kind of like in a Red Bull, when he was with Red Bull in 2011 with Levine Family Racing. Collectively, Levine Family Racing has only been running full-time for the past 2 years and part-time since 2011. And as an organization, they've led 20 laps total. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how the dynamic of Bob Levine and Casey Kane and the entire team, because it is a small team, but it'll be interesting to see how that, you know, kind of goes upward or downward throughout the season and what kind of hurdles they have to face. But guys, well, this is how we're going to end the podcast. You guys are going to say, tell the viewers where they can find you on social media and also what you're going to be doing for Front Stretch this season. So Davey, we'll kick it off with you.
You can find me on Twitter at Davey Center, Instagram at Davey underscore the man, two N's, that's my middle name, underscore four. And for this year for Front Stretch, it's pretty cool. I've joined your guys' cult as an editor for the website, so going to be real fun stuff going on. Going to have the Friday face-off column going on, and I'll still be writing a few news pieces and maybe some columns and opinion stuff here and there. So you'll see me. Don't worry.
Zach, what about you? I know you're taking a little detour with a different outlet, but you're also helping us here at Front Stretch.
Yeah, for sure. Still doing a lot of work here for Front Stretch this year. I'm going to be doing a lot of photo work as well, and I'm going to have a weekly column, the Underdog House. So I'm going to be focusing on drivers like Casey Kane and all these guys working with smaller teams, David Reagan, drivers like that. So you can find me on Twitter at Zach Racing. I don't really tweet. I'm not really on there, but follow along if you want to. and Instagram at ZCat Racer. That's my biggest social media outlet. So yeah, really excited about this season, and definitely tune in. It's gonna be a fun year.
Yeah, Zach has a lot of cool Instagram pictures on there and Facebook. So check him out on there. You can follow me at Dustin Albino on Twitter or at Dustin underscore Albino on Instagram. And for Front Stretch this year, for the second straight year, I'm going to be in charge of the Xfinity beat. I think we're in for a really cool Xfinity Series season with a lot of new guys transferring to the Cup Series and a lot of guys from the Truck Series and other series coming into the Xfinity Series. So I think it'll be a cool year, and I don't know, I guess we'll have to see how it pans out in about 9.5 months because the season's about to start rolling.
All right, we'll talk to you then. See you in 9.5 months.
And once it gets rolling, it doesn't stop. So. Cool. Thanks for taking the time to listen to the first podcast. And we're going to reamp the podcast this year. There's going to be a bunch of them weekly and then some throughout the week. We're going to mix in interviews. So until next week, this has been the Front Stretch Podcast.